under advisement, and we'll move to our next case this morning. Bobby Joe Schultz versus the United States. I see Ms. Constantine for the government. We're waiting for Ms. Wuhr. And there she is. All right. Good morning, counsel. Can you both hear me?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Ms. Wuhr, you may proceed.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I am Attorney Mary Ware, and I represent the plaintiff, Bobby Joe Schultz. Bobby Joe Schultz is an Iraq veteran who had physical and mental injuries from her war service. Following her time in the service, she was treated by the Department of Veterans Affairs, commencing in 2008. Because of the issue before this court, whether or not her current case before you is claim splitting, I would like to briefly start by going over the claim that was initially filed in Schultz 1. Schultz 1 arose from the issue of breast surgery treatment and complications that included four additional surgeries. That claim was brought in on September 7th of 2013. At the time that I brought this claim on behalf of Bobby Joe Schultz, I specifically requested that all records of her treatment be provided because in the past we've had difficulties getting complete medical records. That claim proceeded in the claim stage, and in early 2015, Bobby Joe advised me that she had been treated at Toma VA for mental health treatment. Those records had never been given to me. She brought this to my attention because one of the people who was being treated with her at the Toma VA had died, and the media had gotten attention of, had gotten involved in reviewing what was going on at the Toma VA involving their mental health practices. Because of that new information, I requested and filed an amended tort claim on March 9th of 2015, again requesting all of Bobby Joe Schultz's records. In response to that, the two claims proceeded and were reviewed in Washington, D.C. together because I had asked that the two cases be considered together because the mental health issues also impacted the breast treatment. On February 18th of 2016, both claims were denied jointly. And in accord with the directions I was given by the VA, we filed a federal action in that case on August 8th of 2016. Now, the administrative tort claim in a Federal Tort Claims Act is very important because once you get into federal court, your allegations are limited to what you put into the claims form. So Schultz 1 proceeded on the basis of the alleged negligent breast treatment and the negligent mental health treatment provided by the Toma VA. During the litigation of this case, it became apparent very late in the litigation that records had been withheld. First, we were advised that the Toma VA records were not complete, and that there were significant pharmaceutical issues involving the medications that had been given to Bobby Joe. We also asked for and requested records from Zablocki VA. This had been requested in the beginning, but had never been given to us. And 2 days before the end of discovery, we obtained additional pharmaceutical records. Now, as the court is aware, when you proceed in federal court on any kind of a claim, whether it's in the administrative stage or once you get to court, you're highly dependent upon your expert testimony. In other words, experts have to review those records and tell you what the significance of them are in terms of negligence and causation. We provided those records to our experts after discovery. And we did that because discovery ended 2 days after obtaining those records. And unsurprisingly to us, the government moved for summary judgment on the TOMA claim. During the course of responding to that summary judgment motion, we produced the new affidavits from our experts, a pharmacist and a psychiatrist, that had looked at those records. When the summary judgment was granted to the defendant, approximately 6-7 months later, we were surprised to find out, one, the court would not consider those affidavits and new opinions because they weren't in the disclosure by these experts that we had filed 2 years before or a year and a half before. The trial court also mentioned that the pharmaceutical issues were new claims. After receiving this disturbing decision, we did what we had to do. We filed new claims before the Department of Veterans Affairs. This is Schultz 2. Now, the claims in Schultz 2 are clearly distinct from the claims in Schultz 1. Schultz 1 involved negligent breast treatment in 2011-2012. TOMA treatment involved two inpatient treatments in 2011, followed by telehealth monitoring done by TOMA up until January of 2012. Now, Schultz 1 has gone to trial before Judge Scudder. It went on the limited basis of the breast treatment because TOMA was no longer, due to the summary judgment motion, part of that trial. At trial, Judge Scudder,
that overall course of treatment was part of the original lawsuit. The fact that some of it was excised and excluded at summary judgment and only a part of the underlying factual pattern in the case actually was tried doesn't make a difference for claim splitting purposes or claim splitting analysis. The overall course of treatment at the TOMA VA and the Milwaukee Zablocki VA from 2011 forward was part of the original lawsuit.
Correct.
And the judge's dismissal of some aspects of that original lawsuit or entry of judgment at summary judgment for the defendants on some aspects of the original lawsuit doesn't mean that the whole course of conduct is not considered for purposes of claim splitting analysis.
Okay.
So you can't just focus on what was tried for purposes of your claim splitting defense here is my point.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. I guess what I was trying to explain to you was what Schultz 2 is all about in terms of how it's distinguished from Schultz 1. Yep. Schultz 2 involves mental health treatment that was provided at outpatient facilities in the Appleton, Green Bay, and Cleveland area. That's the Eastern District of Wisconsin, Green Bay area. It wasn't provided at the TOMA VA, and it wasn't provided at the Zablocki VA. This was outpatient treatment. Of significance with that treatment is that over the course of that treatment, Bobby Joe was provided with multiple combinations of medications. And the new records that we were given and reviewed by the experts clearly show that those medications were harmful. Now, facilities, all hospitals and pharmacy departments are mandated to have in place procedures to identify and flag these dangerous combinations of medications so that they are stopped. This is what did not happen in Schultz 2. As a result, my client had additional injuries from 2013 to 2018 involving her medications. During this period of time, she had rescue squads, 18 emergency room visits, and ongoing mental health problems because of those medications. We presented those in a claim before the agency after we were given notice that the summary judgment against TOMA had been entered. And the reason we did that is because we're mandated by law to bring these claims to the administrative agency prior to coming into court. Indeed, if we look at the Seventh Circuit's ruling in Murray versus United States, they clearly said that you cannot amend a claim in federal court if you haven't submitted an administrative claim. We did that. Now, we want the court to be aware that we believe that the claims are clearly distinct. If we look at the Supreme Court's ruling in Lucky Brand, Dungarees, this ruling in May 14th of 2020, it clearly states that under claim splitting and claims preclusion, it doesn't apply unless you have a common nucleus of operative facts. We don't have that in this case. We have different conduct. The conduct that took place in the Green Bay, Appleton, and Cleveland area is clearly distinct from the claims involving TOMA and the breast surgery. They occurred at different times. In fact, none of the claims involving the Green Bay TOMA and the Green Bay, Appleton, and Cleveland clinic treatment occurred at the time of the negligence we were looking at in Schultz 1.
But all of it occurred before the filing date of the first lawsuit, right? Or almost all of it? From 2011 through August of 2016 when the first suit was filed. The second suit pertained to prescribing behavior by the VA and the outpatient clinics during that period.
Okay, but when you look at the August 8th, 2016 complaint, remember this. In a complaint, your federal complaint, you are limited to the claims you bring up in the administrative stage. So even
understood,
though you've got-
but you had an opportunity to amend after exhausting, and the fact that that was not successful isn't relevant for purposes of claim splitting analysis.
We never attempted to amend the complaint due to this additional treatment because we had to file the tort claim first. And it occurred, keep
after,
in mind,
that's what I meant by exhaustion. But I thought there was an attempt to amend. Maybe I'm misreading the record on that. But
there was an attempt to amend the complaint on a different issue involving the amount of the damages.
Okay.
But that was denied because it was outside of the time for filing an amended complaint. Okay.
But you would have had at least an opportunity to amend after completing the exhaustion requirement, but didn't seek it?
Well, we brought the case initially in federal court in the Green Bay area.
And as a freestanding second suit rather than trying to amend the earlier lawsuit.
Right. We did that because summary judgment had already been granted on the Toma mental health case. And when you look at the two cases, if you were going to try to combine them, it would make sense to combine the Toma with the additional mental health treatment claim. But that summary judgment had already been determined.
Did you learn about the Toma scandal and the prescribing behavior before the summary judgment in the first suit? I think so, right?
Yes.
Right. So you could have asked the district court for an opportunity to amend after you succeeded in exhausting.
That information was part of the complaint.
Which complaint are you referring to now?
Schultz 1. It was part of the complaint in Schultz 1.
Okay, well, that seems to defeat your argument against claim splitting. But you've run out of time, so I think we'll have to go to Ms. Constantine. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Emily Constantine, and I am an assistant United States attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I represent the United States and the Secretary of Health and Human Services in this appeal. At the outset, I just want to make a point that I think will make resolution of this appeal very simple, and that is that this whole argument about administrative exhaustion or whether there was an opportunity to amend is not really at issue in this case, because there is no serious question that the entire factual underpinning of Schultz 2 was explicitly raised by the plaintiff in Schultz 1 at the summary judgment stage.
Right. And, Ms. Ward just seems to have acknowledged that.
So I mean, if you look at the administrative claims underlying Schultz 2, it attaches documents that were first filed in Schultz 1. It's not a secret. There's no, you know, clear analysis that needs to happen in terms of comparing allegations. The lawsuit is literally based on two declarations that were first filed in Schultz 1, and also the declaration of Bobby Joe Schultz, the plaintiff, that was first filed on summary judgment as docket number 53 in Schultz 1. So that is the whole issue of administrative exhaustion. There's no claim that she couldn't have raised things because she had no opportunity to exhaust. These were issues that were raised, and so the court seems to understand that. I want to briefly address the issue of timing in this case. The Lucky Brand decision in particular, not only did that case emphasize that really the relevant date for purposes of a claim splitting type analysis is the date the complaint was filed, but that court also emphasized and includes language about issues that arose after the case was concluded. If you look at 140 Supreme Court, page 1596, it talked about claim preclusion does not prevent parties from bringing a suit involving actions that occurred after the conclusion, that's a quote, of the previous suit. So here, the claims involved events that absolutely existed at the time of Schultz 1. That's why they were raised on summary judgment. It's why she claims that she obtained information about these things during discovery in Schultz 1. So the timing in this situation does not help Ms. Schultz. I'll also note that the first administrative claim in this case that's attached to the amended complaint in Schultz 2 was filed 3 days after the district court in Schultz 1 denied a motion for reconsideration of Ms. Schultz and summary judgment. And that's, if you look at dockets 119 in Schultz 1 and 120, is the decision denying summary judgment. Just a couple other very brief points of clarification. Ms. Schultz indicated that she amended her claim in Schultz 1 to include a claim about the mental health treatment. The second claim that was filed on March 17, 2015, very explicitly referred to medical negligence that started at the Toma VA and continued for years. It was not like a vague claim that was limited to things happening at the Toma VA. This is another quote from the claim. medical negligence involved the inappropriate treatment of Scholes' mental health condition at the Toma VAMC and in the subsequent outpatient medications administered to Scholes. Consistent with that, at the trial in Scholes 1 that was conducted this past March, there was extensive evidence about treatment that Ms. Scholes received at these other outpatient facilities, which are under kind of the umbrella of the Zablocki VA. So to kind of identify the locations of outpatient facilities as if these were new locations is simply not accurate. And then just as a final matter, Ms. Scholes again raises these issues of, you know, lack of documents, or documents weren't being produced. As far as getting a second or third or fourth bite of the apple, these arguments have been raised by Ms. Scholes many, many times in Scholes 1, most recently in November of 2020, and the district court there denied Ms. Scholes' motion for sanctions that sought very similar relief to the relief she's asking for in Scholes 2, which is effectively, you know, to be able to conduct a trial within a trial to try to get another try at these claims. And that was at docket entry 167 in Scholes 1. There are other rejections of these arguments at docket entry 144, 154, 116, and 37. So that's something that has just been raised and rejected multiple times. So if the court were even considering whether there's some equitable issue here, there very clearly isn't. And unless there are any further questions, I will conclude my argument.
Ms. Constantine, one question with regard to Scholes 2. Is the gap now before the judgment is being entered a function of attorney's fees litigation, a function of post-trial motions? What's the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, so the court entered findings of fact and conclusions of law in August and is just gave the plaintiff an opportunity to submit a bill of costs, and as the government filed objections, and I think that the court and clerk's office is sorting that out and will issue judgment once the cost issue is resolved.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Ms. Moore, your time had expired. If you have a few closing thoughts, you may have an extra minute to sum up. But you're still on mute. You'll have to turn on your microphone.
Thank you, Your Honor. The issue regarding the records pertains to the claim stage, and that was one of our counts in Scholes 2. And the reason why it exists is because there is a cause of action in Wisconsin when records are not produced timely. You're responsible for all the damages that flow from the failure to give someone the correct records. This is in the administrative stage, and it's not the same as the sanctions motion that Attorney Constantine was referring to. The crux of our claim against in terms of the records flows from Wisconsin law and the failure to provide those records timely under both federal law and VA claims, VA laws pertaining to records. The other thing I wanted to point out to the court was that Ms. Constantine mentioned the motion for reconsideration that was put in regard to the Toma VA. That was done on the sole issue of tolling of the statute of limitations while the claims are in the claim stage. And we believe that that was part of the issue that should have been looked at in terms of determining whether or not giving Toma summary judgment was appropriate. All right. And that too was where we were advised in conflict with that by the VA people who were handling the administrative claims. And so part of our claims in this case involve the way things were handled administratively in terms of production of records and the information we were given regarding the claims.
All right, thank you very much. Your time has expired. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is